Good evening, Bulls Nation. Welcome inside the Bulls Radio Studio on the University of South Florida's Tampa campus. It is time for a little bit of Bull Rush, the only USF athletics show on the airways. We talk about USF athletics, nothing but for an hour straight. You're listening to Bulls Radio, WUSF 89.7 HD3 Tampa, 1620 AM on campus and streaming worldwide at bullsradio.org. Really has been that kind of day. As I welcome in Will Polson, I'm Kevin Erlinson, to this show. It's been that kind of day, and you can really tell because I put a cough drop in my mouth right before we went on air.
Yeah, is everybody ready to go? Yeah, you're not even ready to go. You're over here sitting here talking with your mouth full like some kind of like heathen.
Well, it's because we invited a guest into the room, and now I'm camera shy.
Yeah, and you're really struggling.
Fright.
You gotta pick it up here a little bit.
It's all right. We're gonna pull it together. Big week in USF athletics, really across the board, unless you play for the football team, of course.
A
lot of storylines to keep track of. USF women's soccer has moved on to the second round of the NCAA tournament, beating UF 4-2, the first time in their program's history they've ever done that. And they are into the second round. They'll play Washington on Friday, 2 p.m. Myself and Will Polston will have the call for you in Tallahassee. Be sure to check that game out. Elsewhere, USF men's soccer, they didn't advance to the conference final. They lost to SMU in controversial fashion, 2-1. We'll talk about that a little later on as well. But they did get an at-large bid. They are in the NCAA tournament, and they will take on Louisville in the first round. They do have to go on the road, an 8-9, but they'll take on Louisville actually tomorrow around this time, 7 p.m. That should be a good game. Remember, USF beat Louisville 2-0 earlier in the season. That was a big win because Louisville was at the time ranked number 5 in the nation. USF men's basketball had a bit of a rough week and some controversy to talk about as well. Big news that Mayank Kerr will no longer be with the team. He is rumored to have put in a transfer request. He's still around, but he will not play this season. And that is not, as far as we know, due to an injury. So big news there. USF women's basketball, they got to 4-0 at home, started off their season 4-0 for the fourth straight year, and then they put up a huge fight against defending champions Baylor last night on ESPN Plus in front of a national audience, kind of, but falling in double digits by 12. But they put up a very good fight, and we'll talk about that later on the show. And then, of course, football had one of their better games of the season, and due to some things that happened, just could not pull off the win and take down the number 17 at the time, Cincinnati Bearcats.
17, they dropped to 19.
And Memphis actually moved up to 18, and they'll take on Memphis next week, this week, 4 p.m., still on last week's brain. We'll have that call on Bulls Radio as well. They'll take on Memphis at 4 p.m. Will and Jack Palmer will be on that call. That should be a good one. All right, let's turn our attention first to USF women's soccer. And Will, I was there in Gainesville for that game. We won't talk about what we were doing as far as calling it, but we were on the air.
That's for sure.
It was a strange situation, but we managed to get the call. And what a professional performance from this team. I've criticized Denise Schulte-Brown in the past for not having her team prepared. I've criticized her for openly admitting that they don't scout the other team, that they don't game plan. But in the last three games, they've beaten UCF in the semifinal of the conference tournament 2-1, a team they lost to 1-0 to finish the regular season. They beat Memphis in the tournament final, a team they lost to in last year's tournament final 3-0, and they were just outclassed on the day. And a team they lost to 2-1 at home this year, again, outclassed in that game. This time, they went into Memphis, they shut them down, beat them 2-0 in the final to win the trophy. And then they have to go on the road because the NCAA kind of screwed them in the draw of the first round of the tournament. They go on the road to Gainesville to take on the Gators, a team they're ranked 10 spots ahead of, but still had to play on the road. And enough cannot be said about the way that they outperformed UF. UF, to be fair, in the reverse game, when they beat USF 2-0 in August, UF didn't have a lot of the ball, but they were lethal on the counter. USF was absolutely ready to handle this UF attack. They knew exactly what to do with every player. Every time a specific player touched the ball, they were in position. They knew what to do.
It definitely seemed that way from back in the studio since I was producing that game. It just seemed like no matter what, USF always could control possession. It seemed like as soon as UF could start to get something moving, all of a sudden it was picked off by some USF defender. It sounded like the ball hardly ever got past the middle of the field in favor of UF. It sounded like they never got into the attacking third, even though they did end up scoring two goals late. It just seemed like it was pure USF. It seemed like they were the only team out there.
It really did feel like that. And UF, aside from an early flurry on and then maybe some desperation in the end where they actually did score twice, but it was against the run of play. And USF just a little flustered because they had such a big lead at the time. They outperformed the Gators, and that was a very professional performance. And I am so impressed. And really, going into this tournament, I wasn't very optimistic. They could go on a run. This team could go on a run.
I mean, if you look at the rest of their season earlier on, USF did not have many losses on the season. Obviously, they ended the season with only four losses. And so far, as you mentioned, going into this tournament, going through the American Athletic Conference tournament, and now heading into the NCAA tournament, they've already taken down three consecutive opponents that were that had their number during the season. And so this is huge. The only other opponent left that defeated them earlier on was that Texas Tech, yes. Back in September 21st, and they haven't had an opportunity to face them yet. But we have mentioned this beforehand that the women's had always had games where it looked like they dominated. They controlled the possession stats. They definitely outshot every single team they ever faced, and they just could not find the back of the net. And now finally getting into tournament play and now into national tournament play, the team's really coming alive, whether it be the team as a whole or Evelyn Vienne, because she
I was gonna say
at least somebody's finding the back of the net, the Bulls are finally scoring goals, which has been something that the team has lacked throughout the rest of the season, whether it be getting 20 shots against Florida and not scoring at all, now able to put up four goals against them, and it was phenomenal. I mean, there was some poor goalie play on Florida Gators' part, but
for one or two of the goals,
but still a lot. At least two of the goals were very, very solid. Great goal. That first goal by Evelyn Vienne was a work of magic.
That was, and really, that was Rosalia Munoz Gonzalez who made that goal. And we've been waiting to see her make a play. She didn't have a goal or an assist coming into this. She's a freshman, but she's been getting some starts. She actually was named to the American Athletic Conference's All Freshman Team, which surprised me a little bit. But then again, the pickings were slim this year. But she comes in off the bench, almost immediately makes that play, and she picked off Eaton Collins, who up until that point, the center back for UF had been phenomenal. She hadn't made a mistake to that point, but she makes a mistake trying to play a long ball, and Gonzalez picks it up, cuts onto her left foot, realizes she didn't have the shot, and she laid off Vienne, and Vienne's not missing from that point. And you speak of Evelyn Vienne, some stats for you. She's got 23 goals this year. And, of course, she's the all-time leading scorer in program history. She's also the all-time leading scorer in American Athletic Conference history. She beat out UConn's Rachel Hill's record of, I believe, 65 or 67 goals. Rachel Hill plays in the NWSL right now, by the way. So that's the company she's in. She's been absolutely outstanding the past couple of weeks. And in the postseason, she's come alive. She's got seven goals in three games.
Absurd.
She scored all four goals in the conference tournament. She scored twice against UCF. She scored twice against Memphis. And by the way, the opening goal against Memphis was one of the best women's soccer or college women's soccer goals I've ever seen. She absolutely danced between the two Memphis center backs and lifted it over Moberg. An unbelievable goal. And as we're going to talk about in a minute with the Oracle's Brian Hattab, she should probably have eight because a little bit of controversy on who the fourth goal is given, but just an outstanding performance by this team, and really the ceiling is very high.
And it goes to show if only Evelyn Vienne is the lone player finding the back of the net, we know what the rest of this team is capable of, whether it be Hochstadter, Nacello, McGrath, Kitching. All of these players are able, and they have shown it throughout the season, that they can find the back of the net, and it's just a matter if Vienne's going to be obviously the centerpiece, but if she starts getting everybody else, scoring can be contagious, and USF will definitely find a way to start blowing out teams.
And we are pleased now to be joined by the Oracle's Brian Hattab. Brian, welcome into the show. We've been talking about USF women's soccer, and a story that I brought to your attention, and we've kind of both been scrambling to see what we can do with it, is that Evelyn Vienne, she's got seven goals this year in the postseason, the two conference tournament games and now the NCAA tournament game. But it should be eight, right?
Oh, Kevin, well, thank you for having me on the show here. Yeah, you brought this to my attention around, I'd say, 4 o'clock today. You showed me the video, and it, for those of you who are not aware, it's a corner kick. Fanny Pelletier-La Roche got credit with the goal. It goes off of her head initially from the corner. I believe it was Hawksdaughter who took it. But then you can see clear as day on the video that USF Women's Soccer tweeted out earlier today, it deflects and takes a different trajectory after it deflects off of Evelyn Vienne's head. That's absolutely her goal, and I mean, every time I watch it, I get more and more a little bit upset at the scoring decision, because absolutely, I mean, it doesn't matter at the end of the day, because, you know, a goal's a goal, and USF won this game, and they won it handily, but like you said, she has 7 goals to open up the postseason. She was their only scorer so far. In reality, she still is. She should have 8 goals, and you were mentioning this as well. I believe the previous record for goals was, what was it, 14, you said?
In the program history, it was 48.
Right, 48. And then she'd have 24 this season with this goal, correct?
Correct.
You put that in that perspective. I mean, you can't take anything for granted. You don't know when your last goal is going to be your last. You know, for all we know, they'll get shut out, you know, this Friday with Washington. She never scores for the program again, and her last goal really wasn't her last goal. As far as what we can do, I mean, we talked about what we can do. I don't know how much you've mentioned on the program so far, but it absolutely needs to be changed, in my opinion.
And that's certainly something we're going to talk about, as we're joined by the Oracle's Brian Hataba. You're the sports editor, like the official, correct, not assistant, right?
Correct. I am I am the real deal, and I pinch myself every time I think about that.
Real deal.
So you're mentioning this record that she's got in the postseason. She scored, if you factor this in, she scored the last, I believe, she's scored the last 8 goals, and then she scored 10 of the last 11 goals if you go all the way back to the ECU game towards the end of the regular season.
Right.
Is there any way to use words to describe how much she has meant to this program?
You know what's funny is I was talking with Coach Denise Shilty Brown on the phone earlier this afternoon around 1 o'clock lunchtime, and you know, I asked her, I said, you know, what can you just say to describe about Ev's recent play? And you know, she told me, you know, you think about this heading into this season, we already were pegging her as one of the greatest athletes of the USF program history, any sport really, already after only 3 seasons. But then you're heading into what should be this mythical senior season, you know, the final go-around, you write all the storylines or whatever, and then sometimes that just doesn't happen. So for Evelyn Vienne to continue to put up those numbers, and she'll always say it's for the team, and she'll be one of the most humble people you'll ever talk to, but I think Denise was spot on with what she told me. You know, you can picture that, you know, dream riding off into the sunset sort of senior season, but so often they don't happen. And for Ev to continue to keep her cool under pressure, I remember when she was going for that program record last season, it ultimately happened in Memphis in October. It was after the Tulsa game, I remember that. I remember thinking to myself, once she finally got it, you know, it wasn't that long having to wait it. Because, you know, she can always say she doesn't worry about those things, but you're only human. People are asking you these questions. We're asking her those questions. Ev, how do you feel? What were you thinking, et cetera? So for her to continue to perform under this pressure, because all eyes are on the team when you're ranked number 11 in the nation, and you're the conference champion, all eyes are going to be on your team naturally. And when you're the star striker, all eyes are going to be on you even more so. And to continue to put up those numbers, you could talk all day about Evelyn Vienne, and I don't think you could ever properly put into words what we witnessed with her.
It's certainly a special player. No one's going to come after her in this program, not for a very long time, certainly not while we're still around USF, but
right.
Just an outstanding career, and hopefully that USF can keep this going. And I got to say, I've been talking all week that this looks like a team that is just starting to peak because they've been playing well all year. They've dominated opponents, but it never feels like they've played their best game. Do you feel like this team is starting to round into form and that they could really go on a legitimate run here?
Well, you know what, and that's the thing. It's all about when you get hot. You don't have to be the most dominating team in the world in for the entire regular season. I mean, your name's Erlinson, so you know full well what happened in hockey last season with the Lightning.
Don't remind me.
That's painful
for
me. That
one kind of hurt.
But you saw that, and it didn't make a lick of difference when the playoffs came around. They were done in four games. So it's all about getting hot at the right time. And, yeah, they did what they needed to do in the regular season to put themselves in the position to get a first-round bye. No, they didn't host it at Corbett, but like Denise said, they've been road warriors. And, you know, sometimes that's what you need, get away from home, get away from it all. Really, that can make a world of difference, getting on the road. And, you know, what I noticed, honestly, is it's something I think we talk about a lot. And, we Denise tends to say that they don't really watch film. They worry about themselves. But you could tell in that Florida game, they were prepared for anything Florida had. So it was like the perfect storm on Friday night in Gainesville. They were ready for everything. They were in perfect form. You know, this is a team that, you know, yeah, I had my doubts that they could even I don't think I ever had my doubts that they were going to make an NCAA bid during the season, but I had my doubts they're going to win a game. Where are they going to be seated in the conference tournament? But you know what? They've done everything that I think they've needed to do, but because they got hot at the right time.
And once again, for our listeners, that USF women's soccer will continue their run against Washington at 2 p.m. on Friday. We'll have the call right here on BullsRadio.org. Let's turn our attention now to the other side of Corbett, the other half, the less successful team recently, but certainly the more prestigious program, USF men's soccer, who have an Elite Eight run in their history back in 2011. They are in the NCAA tournament, and though they've been in the tournament a couple times in the last 5 years, I don't think they've ever felt this good about getting there. And we'll talk about what happened up in Orlando last week, and we'll try not to use any curse words.
They got chipped. What happened?
They did, and for the listeners that didn't see what happened, they took SMU, a top 10 team in the country, to overtime. And then to double overtime, you could argue, and I think Bob Buthorn was the first to point out, that they controlled all of that game. They were the better side. And then SMU on a corner in the 105th minute, a ball was knocked down with an SMU hand at the back post. The referee standing right there, was not called, and it's put in almost immediately. The goal was allowed to stand, even though we think that there was review available, that there was replay review available. It was not used. SMU went on to win, and then they did get kind of battered by UCF in the finals, so maybe it wouldn't have mattered from a USF perspective, but it left a sour taste in their mouths. But hey, they're going dancing, and by the way, they're going dancing against a team that they've already seen and beat this year.
Well, what I think is the most egregious thing about that SMU sequence is we still don't know, and I think it's been a week now, and we still don't know, was that a reviewable play? And I think if it was, it would have absolutely been overturned. Clear as day, that was a handball. But for me, the major takeaway is we don't actually know, and I don't think the conference has issued any statement one way or the other. And to me, that's the unacceptable thing. Is we need to know, was that reviewable or not? If it was, why was it not reviewed? But moving on, like you said, you know, They handily defeated Louisville when the Cardinals were actually ranked number 5 in the nation earlier this season here at Corbett. Had a chance to talk with Bob and some players today, and the reality is it's great that you kind of had that experience. You've played that team, and it certainly helps, but teams have their ups and downs. I remember that was, Harrison Divinish Mears, those are his exact words. You know, teams have their ups and downs during the year. So, you know, just because you beat them and you beat them pretty handily at Corbett doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a similar result. After all, you're also playing them on their turf this time. But, yeah, you're encouraged with the draw, absolutely.
It should be a very interesting game. And I think for USF, another big thing to look at is they finally got their players kind of going in form. Adrian Bilhard came into this season without a goal since his freshman campaign. He's a junior now, and he almost took half the year. He did actually score against Tulsa, and then that was wiped out by an NCAA rule because of ineligibility, and we don't have time to talk about that. But it took him a bit to get going, but now he's starting to score a lot. He's scoring for fun. I believe he's got goals in now three straight games, something like that. He did score the penalty to equalize the game against the Mustangs. If he's going, so do USF, huh?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, it's kind of like we were just talking about with the women's team. They're in their best form, I think, right now. They've been in great form all season, but they've really... You want all your players to be clicking at the right time, and certainly for Bilhard, it had been a struggle for him, and it's been great to see him getting things going here as you know he gets more serious in the conference tournament and now NCAA play. You like what you've seen from him. It's his first chance in the NCAA tournament. I know he's excited, As women's soccer goes with VN, I mean, I think they'll sink or swim with Bilhard this weekend.
Now, you were able to talk to some of the players and then Bob Beathorn today. Everyone appears to be healthy, because I know there was some concern about Bilhard and Javane Brown going into that game against SMU. They both played, I believe, the entire game. Bilhard might have come off for about 10 minutes.
Bilhard came off, I don't remember the exact thing that was wrong with him, but he did come off in that. I don't think he ever came back, but he was fine. He was on the training grounds today. Nothing that I saw that would indicate that there's any problem with him.
And certainly USF can't afford to do that. Their depth isn't the best, but certainly several players have stepped up. Emilio Icaz has had a fantastic season. Enrique Gallina has been absolutely outstanding for USF in the middle of the park. Diego Guerrero at times. Javane Brown has been like a horse untethered patrolling that back line. He's been unbelievable. Certainly a lot to like about this USF team, who, to be fair, they're losing some key seniors, but nobody you would say are overly important and cannot be replaced. So maybe not necessarily this year. Of course, you want to do well in the tournament this year, but a bright future for this team.
Well, and that's funny. Before I got on this phone call, I was working on my story for our print edition tomorrow, and I was looking to see who are the final members of that last NCAA team before Beathorn took over, and it was Rutterham and... I'm blanking on the other one right now.
Rosales.
Rosales, thank you. So you've only got two seniors that you're losing this year, and obviously losing Rutterham is definitely tough, but this team, you saw a great play from young guys like Victor Claudel, Brown, examples there, that it's encouraging because... Yeah, this is a great season, but if you were losing a ton of... I'll give you an example of where you had a good season and you lost a ton of veteran talent. You look at USF Volleyball last year, where they won 20 games, but they lost all those seniors, and now they had a team of... Half of it was comprised of freshmen, and they just had a pretty bad ending to their season. Losers of 15 in a row. So... It's very encouraging if you're Bob Beathorn, you know that you've got this future here. You've had success this year, and a lot of young guys have stepped up too. So, yeah, you obviously want to have a good show, maybe win a game or two in this upcoming tournament, but it's one of those things where it's also you're really, really encouraged about the future for men's soccer.
You've already had a great season, and everything else beyond this is just a little extra bonus. They will kick off their NCAA tournament journey against Louisville tomorrow night at 7:30, as well as USF women's soccer will take on Washington on Friday. Two big games by these two soccer programs that have really defied the expectations this year.
And here's the thing. I know Michael Kelly tweeted this out, I think it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. USF is one of 14 programs in the nation and the only one in the American to have both their men's and women's soccer team make the NCAA tournament. And I did the math. They are one of only 11 with 11 left still playing, as a couple obviously got knocked out on the women's side last weekend. So they're in really good company right now. There's a lot of encouragement on the soccer side right now for USF.
Good times at Corbett Stadium, and hopefully for the future as well. You can catch that game tomorrow night. I imagine it'll be on ESPN3 or one of those
ACC networks.
So you can catch that game on there if you get it, which I don't know if anybody actually gets the ACC network.
I'm not sure either if I get it, and I get all the channels.
And then Friday afternoon, 2 p.m., you can catch USF women's soccer taking on Washington on the Pac-12 network, but obviously we'll have it on BullsRadio.org as well, and we'll see you up there, I hope, in Tallahassee on Friday.
Yes, I'm moving things along, trying to get myself up there. I'd love some Momo's pizza.
Oh, I'm dreaming of that. Can't wait for that. All right, well, thank you for talking to us, Brian.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That was Brian Hatzab of the Oracle. He's the sports editor over there. Really good insight on this soccer team, or both these soccer teams, and you really can't overstate how phenomenal it is for this athletics program, which at times has gone through very dark periods. And if you look past the football team this year, there's a lot to love about the athletics on this campus.
Both teams are just hot. As Hatzab said, they're getting hot at the right time, and that's very important. A lot of the times, it's not about the best team in the regular season. It's about who's getting the momentum late. And I think you could say that with the MLB this season. The Washington Nationals ended up able to pull out a World Series out of only sliding in as a wild card team. Trust me, as a St. Louis Cardinal fan, I felt that one personally. But I mean, it happens, and sometimes whenever your team's hot, you're hot, and just you happen to get the good end of the stick, and then you just ride it out.
And it should be interesting to see how these teams do, and for my sake, I hope the women's team moves on, because I'd love a weekend in Tallahassee. That'd be quite fun.
Wouldn't we all?
All right, we're going to step aside, take our break at the halfway mark. When we come back, we've got USF women's basketball. We'll break down their effort last night against Baylor, as well as how the season's gone. And then we'll turn our attention to USF men's basketball. And maybe Stephen A. Smith will be joining us at the end to talk about USF football.
I have a bone to pick with him.
It should be an interesting rest of the show. I hope you stick around. But we're going to take a step away, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
So do you blow it out?
Speaking of Hal, I don't have a good transition pun. Welcome back inside the Bulls Radio studio, the USF Tampa campus. That's where we're at. You're listening to Bulls Radio, WUSF 89.7 HD3 Tampa, 1620 AM on campus and streaming worldwide at bullsradio.org and on radiosaintpete.com. I forgot to mention that at the top of the show. I apologize, Joe. But thank you so much for simulcasting this show, and thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in tonight for the only USF Athletics-only radio show in the area, probably in the world, unless there's some super fans somewhere else.
I think there's like that weird one radio station out in like Maine. they like USF
Bulls,
sports up there.
Bulls Radio colon Maine.
Yes,
that's our sister
look it
station
up
out there.
Yeah.
Don't
it's
look
brought
it
to
up
you by Ted.
Ooh, it's
great,
Ted.
Great little reference there.
All right, let's turn our attention now to USF basketball. We'll start on the women's side again because that's the more fun storyline to talk about. They took on the defending champions Baylor last night in Waco, Texas. Put up a very good fight. Eventually fell 58-46. It was closer than that for sure, but really just a great performance by this team as they've shown all year. And it's because of a couple different players stepping up, and that's who we're going to pick on: Maria Alvarez, freshman shooting guard, and then junior transfer who is also a junior, Betty Manunga, who's playing in the post. Two outstanding players thus far.
Betty Manunga has probably been one of the the best addition for USF women's basketball. Whenever you see names like Loxa and Ferreira leave the program, you start to think that the future may be a little bleak, especially if you see how the women's played last year, having to be ran by Anna Pahadich and what seemed like a solely only Anna Pahadich team. And coming into the season, you start to get a little worried after especially how you saw last season go down. And now with additions such as Brabankova and Alvarez and now Betty Manunga, who's averaging, is she still averaging a double-double a game?
She actually led USF scorers last night against Baylor. She actually was tied for the lead all scorers with 16 points, and she grabbed 12 rebounds. So once again, a double-double. That's 4 out of 5, I believe.
Yeah, absurd. She's been everywhere, all over the court. And, you know, and she's so calm. Whenever you'd sit there and talk to her in post-game press conferences, she is just, she's so level-headed. She seems like she knows exactly what she's doing, and she just seems like it's strictly business with her. And I feel like it's that way on and off the court. And so she had even mentioned in a post-game press conference with us that as soon as she sees a ball go off the rim, she talked about like her amazing battles at the glass and stuff like that. She said, as soon as I see a ball, I go get it. And that's all I kind of thought of it. And she said she never really shows any emotion because her dad, who taught her how to play basketball, always taught her to score and then just go right back on defense. And she's very, very stern about it. She doesn't show much emotion on the court, but she's kind of like a silent leader on this team. Very, very under the radar and very, very low key about it. But she has been absolutely phenomenal. And Alvarez has been out of her mind as well, coming up a big help for USF behind the arc, amazing three-point shooter, as well as been able to control the field whenever she's out there and Pinzon's on the bench. Just doing a phenomenal job coming off the bench and supplying points as well.
Look, we're not allowed to play favorites because we are officially neutral, but Maria Alvarez, oh, what a player. Ballads will be written about her, I imagine, as her career progresses because she's only a freshman and she's starting to become automatic from three at the right elbow, or sorry, the right hook. No, the right wing.
Wing.
One of those words. Just to give you a couple of different contexts, things you're talking about. You're talking about how Anna ran the show last year. Her and Sydney Harvey last year took 40% of USF shots in the season. 40%. And Sydney Harvey missed quite a bit of time last year. And the fact that she's not going to play this year, we speculate she has not dressed for a game yet. And I don't think that she's going to play the rest of the way for this season. That's a big loss. And coming into this year, that was a big loss. But the way this team has responded has been unbelievable. And you're talking about Betty Manunga and her rebounding abilities. She leads the team in rebounds with 55. Two players have 28. That's your number two and number three, Tamara Henshaw and Shea Leverett. And the thing that blows your mind about Betty Manunga is she's got 26 offensive rebounds. 26. That's almost half of her rebounds on the offensive glass. And she's got more offensive rebounds than the rest of her team, other than Henshaw and Leverett, have total rebounds. That is just outstanding, absurd stats. I don't think we're going to see a player play at this pace. She probably won't be able to keep it up all year, but I don't think we've ever seen a player play at this pace, at least at the glass, in USF history.
I mean, we're only five games in, and she has yet to slow down. So, definitely off to an amazing start, especially now, just now starting her Division I career, coming all the way from – she was a junior college transfer, yeah?
She played at Northeastern Oklahoma A&M.
There's a household name. And, absolutely phenomenal basketball out there. I mean, apparently, because she was an All-American both years that she was out there.
Yep, she was unanimous last year, and I believe she led all of junior college in rebounds last year, or she was third or something like that.
Those are very fancy titles to say that you shouldn't be playing junior college basketball.
Exactly.
You should be in Division I.
Well, and that's the thing. You're talking about how composed she is. She's a junior. She's experienced.
It's true.
She's not a freshman with wide eyes coming in here and playing, punching above her weight. This is how good she is.
But how many players do you think can come from the junior level and come into a Division I, especially such a great program like USF, historically been one of the more phenomenal programs, especially on campus? USF women's basketball has probably been one of the better programs by far out of all other programs on campus. And so I'm sure whenever you're being recruited by the team, you know about the legacy of the team. You know about, the history that this team has. And it can't be taken lightly. It's similar to whenever you get recruited by big names in Division I football. I mean, everybody has legacy. Everybody has history. Everybody's going to have those players that you remember that walk through the halls. Like, it's the same thing with USF basketball. Maybe not to the same exact extent, but I mean, it's still a really good division, historically a really good Division I women's basketball program.
I forget which college it was, but someone was telling me she had offers from a couple P5 schools, and she chose USF. That's a testament to Coach Fernandez, one. That's a testament to the legacy of this program you're talking about. Before we sidetrack ourselves too much, let's come back to what happened last night. Playing the defending champions, ranked number two, Baylor. They go into Waco. They play a very good game. Baylor started to pull away at the end. Actually, USF had it pretty close for most of the game, and then Baylor outscored them by 8 in the last quarter to really pull away. But the difference in this game, and Coach Fernandez will talk about this probably all night if you let him, Baylor made 25 free throws, USF made 5. There's the ball game right there. Now, it helps when you're getting three times as many free throw trips that Baylor did. They had 39 to USF 13, and that's a whole other conversation. But, I think if you take the officiating out of it, there were some poor decisions, some bad missed shots, like wide open looks that they just miss. They usually don't miss. There's a string where they turned the ball over three straight possessions, and Baylor scored 8 points, I think, in that stretch. I think this USF team beat themselves last night.
Whenever the women played VCU, we talked to Coach Fernandez in postgame, and he had mentioned that there were a couple opportunities there in that game against VCU where the girls were taking shots from behind the arc and were wide open and still managed to rim the ball and, end up missing it ultimately. And he even said whenever we play better teams, we're not going to be able to win those games. And it went ahead and showed it tonight. Or not tonight, but back then whenever they played Waco. Baylor Bears. Yeah. And, you mentioned the trips to the free throw line. I didn't get to see any of the game, but I did see the halftime stats were posted on Twitter. USF had only been to the line once at half. That's absurd. I mean, maybe it's absurd to us because we send people to the line like crazy and, we get sent to the line like crazy. But I guess whenever you play those phenomenal teams and nobody's getting into foul trouble, I guess it's just another day in the office for Baylor. And it just – it went to show. And as you mentioned, only seems to be that one quarter, that fourth quarter, where there's really just a big point differential. Otherwise, USF definitely made the Bears sweat. And so hats off to the team to go into Baylor, go into the number two team in the country, and go in and face them in their own court and at least give them a tough game.
Well, and that pulling away in the fourth quarter comes because Henshaw and Brabenkova and Leverett all fouled out in the game, so they were down.
Ooh.
Yes, and again, Baylor went to the line 14 times in the fourth quarter alone, and USF didn't even go to the line 14 times all game, and I think that tells you all you need to know, especially because what's the legacy of Baylor? You know, they have the national titles, but what are they so good at?
Oh, I was going to say Brittany Griner, but
that's part of it.
Battle at the glass,
exactly.
Big girls down low. Definitely.
USF out rebounded Baylor. They out rebounded Baylor in this game, and in fact, they had 14 offensive rebounds to Baylor's 10. And to me, if you're out rebounding a team, you should be drawing more fouls, if not just as many. And I know complaining about officiating is a cop-out move. I don't like it when that happens, especially in a game where I think they beat themselves regardless of the officiating. I think they had a chance to win this game. 39 trips to the line to 13. That's egregious, because this is not an undisciplined basketball team. And I'm not saying that every call was ticky-tacky, but there were probably three times as many calls in and around the three-point line than there were in the paint. And that's just unusual. And to me, it was disappointing, because maybe the game plays out a little bit differently, especially if players aren't getting into foul trouble. They have to come out, because I believe Manunga got two fouls immediately in the first quarter, and she had to sit down for a bit. So to me, that was disappointing to see that poor rebounding. But I think Coach Fernandez won't even want to talk about that. I think he'd rather talk about how they beat themselves, because they went into Waco against the defending champs, took them to the fourth quarter, led the game at one point, were in and around them, went on a 10-0 run to take the lead late in the second quarter. The fact that we're sitting here talking about a team who should be rebuilding, who lost their most impressive, talented senior core in the last two seasons, beat themselves in a game against the defending champions, it's astounding what Coach Fernandez has been able to do.
It speaks for itself, and this team has really come along and been way above standards and expectations, at least from our standpoint. You know, with a couple of new faces in there, you wouldn't think that the team would be able to gel so quickly. But as we mentioned, Betty Manunga has come in and made an immediate impact, and she has been that kind of like silent killer whenever she's on the court. Brabenkova has worked her way into the starting lineup in a couple of games. She's been a great player to have onto the court, as well as Maria Alvarez has been just able to run the court and be able to put up points whenever it's needed. So it's the next man up mentality, whatever we expected. Even Tamara Henshaw, she's been one of those players that was kind of under the radar whenever all those other players were here, such as Alyssa Rader and you know, others. And whenever she's down there like in the glass, you wouldn't think too much about her, and now she's come up and done phenomenal for herself. In most cases, been in the starting lineup and been able to run things down low whenever Jordeo or Leverett's not in the game, or just working with Manunga. So hats off to the team in general.
And by the way, Henshaw, the only senior on this squad, so the future is very bright for USF women's basketball. They will only play one game before we talk again. That's this Sunday, 2 p.m. against St. Francis at home. If USF women's soccer loses on Friday, we'll be there for that call. Otherwise, we'll be in Tallahassee for the third round NCAA game. USF women's soccer will play at 1 p.m. We'll have that call instead. But there will be a game around lunchtime on Sunday, so you can tune in to BullsRadio.org for that. Quickly, let's shift our attention to men's basketball. And things haven't gone to plan. They sit at 1-2, an ugly loss to IUPUI. I'm not going to get into what that stands for.
Do you not know?
I do know.
I was going to say Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis.
Just making a little joke there. Poor loss at Boston College, where they led for quite a bit of that game, I believe, end up losing by 14. And then it came out during that game on Wednesday that Mayan Kerr will no longer be with the team, which is a huge blow to a squad that's already missing your top big man in Alexis Yetna.
The team's big man depth is slowly disintegrating, and it's
if it even exists at all anymore.
I mean, when you look at it, it's just kind of
Michael Durr and friends.
I was gonna say it's Michael Durr and whatever player on the guard position wants to go down low for some reason, which seems to be LaQuincy Rideau and or Justin Brown. You know, but I mean, Rideau's been one of those guys who's been right around the glass as well. But I mean, it's. USF's going to have to find some way to counteract everything, and it seems like BG has been running with that four-guard set for the most part, working only with Kerr as the lone big man down low, and or not Kerr, that'd be awkward, Durr, as the lone big man in the paint. And so far, I mean, from the one game I called the Boston College game, and so I got to be there and see that, and that game wasn't close on paper, but you could tell that Durr was making such a big difference. There were so many 5-second violations on the baseline whenever Boston College was trying to inbound pass. Just that 7-foot frame standing right in front of you, trying to prevent you from throwing, kind of reminds me of Taco Fall over at UCF. That big stature of a man. I'll say that to prevent saying anything else. But yeah, just huge, huge frame. Hard to work around. Definitely hard to out rebound, especially whenever you're 6'3" going up against somebody who's 7 foot down low. But I mean, USF's gonna have to find something to counteract it, and they'll have a decent challenge coming up here soon. They've got Wofford and they have Loyola Chicago, two teams who have made decent runs in the tournament last year, so we'll see what they can come up with.
Yeah, Wofford game is tomorrow night at the Yuengling Center, 7 p.m I believe I'm on the call for that one.
You are.
That's right.
It's kind of an awkward time to realize that.
Yeah. Can't remember what games I'm calling
tomorrow.
These days. That'll be at 7 p.m. You've got that on bullsradio.org as well. I know nothing really matters with college basketball. I mean, you want to have a good Iowa Conference showing. No, let me finish the sentence.
Sorry, that was fun.
it doesn't matter until you get to conference play, especially in the American Athletic Conference, which is such a good basketball conference. But almost for the psyche and the morale of this team, is this a must-win tomorrow?
I'd say after dropping the last two games the way that you did, I'd say that's fair to say.
Especially the Ooey Pooey game, because they lost 70-53.
It's a little rough. I mean, it's not the numbers you like to see. 74-60 is still not even a great number against Boston College. Sure, they're an ACC team, but they're a lower-tier ACC team.
What I would say is that USF is going to be the underdog in most games. They were not the underdog against the University of IUPUI.
The University of Ooey Pooey.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I think that USF was considered the favorite, especially inside the Yuengling Center, having that team travel down here. I mean, it's really unfortunate. If Alexis Yetna is there, I'd like to think it's a different story. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Ooey Pooey just came out and just dominated. It could have been... It's hard to say the word ooey pooey and domination in the same sentence. I understand, but like maybe it was just their night. You know, some teams get hot, some teams fall cold. It's just a matter of the game. You know, sometimes, for example, whenever we were looking at that VCU spot chart, their top scorer Sydney Archie had a game prior to coming into USF where she went 0-17 on the day. That was rough. 0-13 from the floor, 0-4 from behind the arc. And
those are Spencer Schrader numbers.
Let me tell you, in a couple minutes, I'll tell you all about Spencer Schrader numbers. But, just rough outings. Sometimes your star players fall cold. I mean, it happens. Mike Trout goes 0-3 and strikes out 3 times sometimes in baseball games. It's a matter of the game.
And for sure, Coach Brian Gregory facing the first bit of adversity in his 10 years. This is his third season. It really was given a pass the first year. He didn't really have a whole lot to work with. Last year was a shock in a good way. This year hopefully won't turn into a shock in a bad way, but early on it's starting to trend in that direction, and I wouldn't bet against Gregory figuring it out, but he's going to have to orchestrate something. He's going to have to come up with a new game plan, because he does have to change the mentality of this team without Alexis Yetna, and it'll be interesting to see how he pulls it off. All right, let's turn our attention now to the final team.
Let's do it.
The team that nobody and yet everybody wants to talk about. No one likes talking about them, and yet everyone loves to hear about them.
That's more than willing.
USF football. They did it again, folks. They found another way to break USF fans' hearts. Once again, playing a very good game against probably the best team they're going to see all year, Maybe you can make an argument for Wisconsin, but Cincinnati's up there. They lost 20-17 despite holding a 10-0 lead at halftime, despite really outplaying them on every side of the ball, despite looking like a complete team for the first time all year against a quality opponent. And, Will, you're going to channel your Stephen A. Smith, and I'm going to turn my mic off for this, and folks, buckle up. This should be good.
So, being the lone person along with Tommy McTague on that call, this Cincinnati game was one that hit a little bit different. It felt almost personal whenever we were at the game, not just from the Spencer Schrader fourth field goal off the upright, and I'm being a Bears fan, seeing any kick go off the upright kind of feels a little personal. But this, in general, this is by far, as you mentioned, the best game that USF has played this season. I would say even over the blowout game, I mentioned this on the recap that we did for Radio St. Pete, that it was way better of a team effort than against South Carolina State. It was way better of a team effort than when they manhandled UConn up in their own stadium. And we were there for that, so we got to see that performance as well. It was an all-around amazing showing by the team. Jordan McLeod put up his career total in passing yards. No turnovers from him. Did not fumble. Did not throw an interception. He made amazing reads. Finally went through
one sack too, right?
Only one sack. And I brought that up, and I'm sorry. I mentioned that. That's my fault. I said he hadn't been sacked, and then literally the next play he got sacked. But that was the lone sack in the game, and I made sure not to mention it the rest of the time. So you're welcome. But
not really, though.
No, not at all. No, it's completely my fault. But McLeod finally, and I mean finally, looked past a primary receiver in this game. He didn't just glue his eyes to one person and just stick to that route. We've seen many of times whenever you see Bryce Miller cross over the middle, it's going to him, and you can see it as soon as he takes the snap. He'll take the snap and immediately look to his right, and his eyes do not move. Finally, he scans the field. He finally has patience in the pocket, and behind a bruised and battered offensive line that's missing a starter. And he still had a ton of time. He still made sure that passing was his primary option. He never ran first, which is what we've seen plenty out of him before. There were many of times against UConn, against BYU, even whenever he was filling in at the very beginning of the season, design run plays. It was all Jordan McLeod was running, and he would hike the ball and just run. And that was it. He wouldn't even think about passing. And when he finally did, he found Johnny Ford at Georgia Tech for a touchdown. It was ironic. We were like, oh, hey, maybe you should try throwing the ball. And then we realized he had subpar arm power. But nonetheless, even his underthrows in this game worked out perfectly. He threw an amazing back shoulder pass to Xavier Weaver. He threw a dime into the back left corner of the end zone to Bryce Miller. He was all over the field. And the run game was great, even missing Trevon Sands. You have that change of pace back gone. It was Cronkright who had to become the new power back running up the middle, and Joyner Jr. who's working outside the tackles. And the defense was absolutely outstanding. Didn't force as many turnovers as normal, but still able to force a turnover in their own right, which is nothing new of the USF defense. And phenomenal play that it shows completely. Going into half, Cincinnati had 46 yards total. I'm not on the run, not in the air, total. This is a team that whenever you see those kind of numbers, how do you not expect to win that game? You hold them 46 yards. They were like 1 for 7 on third downs. It was the most complete game I have ever seen. And do you know the amount of time that Cincinnati was leading in that game? They led for 0.00 seconds. They won on They won on a time ending field goal. Plenty of opportunities, plenty of points left on the board from the St. Felix pass interference call that looked like it could have gone either way to Spencer Schrader leaving 12 points on the field or on the upright. Whatever you want to call it, it was a rough one. And so USF by all means showed amazing prowess and still managed to not be able to get it done.
And that really does put the season in much jeopardy. Although I think It's like seeing a very slow-moving car accident happen in front of us. We saw it coming a month ago, and we're seeing it play out now. And even though the driver's doing their best to skid out of it, they're still going to make contact with that oncoming car, and it's going to be a rough season to look back on when we're in the spring. And does it cost Charlie Strong's job? We don't know. We're not sure. But this is really a tough pill to swallow for USF fans. Maybe we should have seen it coming from last year, because they had a very, very poor season. Even though they won seven games, they didn't win a whole lot of those convincingly. And then they really weren't in any of the last six games they played. And now, just to get bowl eligible, just to get to 500, they're going to have to beat Memphis and UCF in back-to-back weeks. And that UCF game is on the road. So it's just not going to happen. And a very poor season. And there aren't a whole lot of positives to take away, because the best thing this team has going for it right now is it has a championship caliber defense. Guess what?
It's gone next year.
You're losing like five players. So
Greg Reeves is gone. Macon's gone. Livingstone's gone. Studstill's gone. It's not looking good.
And not even to say who might transfer out, because you might have some of that. So this defense isn't going to be as good as it was.
You've got a linebacking core who's young in Bellamy, Boyles, and Greer. Those are solid young options that could stick with the program, bearing that they do. And you have Nick Roberts, Bentley Sanders, KJ Sayles, who at least, bearing that they do not transfer, have one more year. After that, your defense is gone. The defense, as you know it, as USF, is gone. And it would be an absolute shame to see what is probably one of, if not the best, defense in program history fizzle out to an unproductive offense.
Who's going to rush the passer next year? That is the biggest question, because you're losing both your ends. Well, you're graduating too.
Sorry, folks. I've got 4 years eligibility, though. I never played.
This program's on the wayside.
I'll go to grad school.
So USF football will continue its season this Saturday. They try to stay alive, stay bowl eligible. Senior day should be an emotional affair for some of these seniors. Think of Kirk Livingstone. Think of Greg Reeves. Some of these players have been here all 4 years. They've seen it all, and they'll be playing their final game at Raymond James Stadium. 4 p.m. kickoff. We'll pulse in Jack Palmer. Milani Lee will be on that call for you on bullsradio.org. And then they'll finish off on Black Friday against UCF. That'll do it for this edition of Bull Rush. Don't forget, tomorrow night we've got Wofford at 7 p.m. USF men's basketball taking on the Terriers at 7 p.m. I'll be on the call for that one. Then we've got USF women's soccer on Friday, 2 p.m. They take on Washington, and then maybe they'll play again on Sunday if they advance. Do stay tuned to our Twitter feed at the Bulls Radio. We'll give you all the updates on the broadcast, but that'll do it for us here on Bull Rush. Thank you so much for tuning in all season long. Hopefully, I'm projecting onto the audience, but thank you for tuning in tonight, and hopefully you'll stick with us throughout the USF athletics calendar year. Have a great night, everybody. I'll do it over again. I didn't want it to end. I watch it blow in the wind. I should have listened to my friends. Leaving this in the past, but I wanted to last. You were made out of plastic, fake. I was tangled up in your drastic ways. Who knew evil?